Welcome back to the Fire Break. I'm Steve Wolf. The Fire Break, as always, is sponsored by Team Wildfire, developing new technology and tactics for conquering tomorrow's most devastating fires. You know, I kind of make that up a little bit each time, but you get the gist of it, right? We're trying to figure out how to keep fires from killing people. So my guest today is David Sipnesky. David is the founder, the CEO, janitor, cook, bottle washer, babysitter, etc., at the Athena Project, which is supposedly going to make our lives a little bit easier by letting us offload some of that mental burden of fire management to computers that will supposedly do this work with less complaining, provide more data. And David, you're do they complain?
Yeah, there's a lot of complaining on all sides, you know. And I'd like to, first of all, thank you, Steve, for the invitation here. Looking forward to the dialogue with you. But yeah, you know, Athena, the job is to make it easy for the acre itself.
For the acre, right?
You're itself, the talk,
right? I think your motto was voice of the acre, right? I love that idea, right? So I'm your agent. I represent you. You're the land, and I'm looking out for your best interests. Now, since you don't speak very verbal, you're not very vocal, I'm going to take what you're inferring, and I'm going to put it into words and numbers, and I'm going to share that information with people so that they can do the best they can for you.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I guess the relationship between humans, computers, and the environment. The environment has its language. It needs computers to translate it to understand what we're saying, for us to understand what it's saying. And that comes through data. And the data is out there, and presently, or over the past decades or so, you know, it takes government grants and teams of researchers and grad students to do lots of work. And then they come up with a wonderful discovery, which grabs more grants. And in the meantime, you know, there are guys and operators making business decisions.
Right.
And they need to make a decision right now. And as you were just saying, you know, wildfires, which have always been around, but it's safe to say over the past 10 years have become very impactful and consequential on economic, society, resiliency, et cetera. You know, we need to begin to having a more clear dialogue with the acre. And that's Athena's mission, is to make that dialogue as easy to have as you and I, you know, on this podcast right now.
So just like I would say, hey, David, are you thirsty? You want to drink a glass of water? You interpret the land so that the land can say, hey, I'm thirsty. I need to be watered. Hey, I need to be harvested. Hey, I need more nitrogen. Mm-hmm. Hey, I need to be left alone.
Right. Or I've got this bucket of dollars. You know, we originated out of agriculture. And I need to, you know, a food company wants to contract with its growers to get a crop in, and they want to meet these metrics. And so acres, where do I deploy this dollar? And acres respond back, well, you know, apply this much dollars to me to be able to get this kind of production, and I'll produce this quality at this metric, and I'll use it in a projected this much water for your water per gallon metric that you're trying to achieve. And you should go and contract with those guys over there. They're able to produce this for you. So it's that kind of back and forth, and that kind of principles apply to whether you're looking at insurance and, you know, you've got a capacity and how do you deploy the capacity. Or in this case, in the case of wildfires, we've been working with some utilities and some engineering groups doing wildfire management plans, et cetera. And so
give me a specific example. Let's say I work at PG&E. Mm-hmm. Someone told me, hey, we hired you because we want to have less fires. And I was like, okay, what do we do? I don't know what to do. You know, I shake the beads and we did all the things and the fires keep happening and the electric lines are arcing and, you know, so I call and someone says, you know what? You guys should really call David. They've got something going on over there. And when they call, what do you have going on? And how would you explain what you offer, you know, in layman-ish terms to someone who was just told, make sure we don't have any more deadly fires?
Yeah, so
how do you help me do that?
A couple of real-world instances that we were just coming off of. Primarily the Southwest, we've got Northwest utilities and one of the Hawaiian Islands that use us as the as the foundation. The first step of this is just getting a base, the foundation for their wildfire management plan. So it's assessing from our layers of data where to establish what they're calling HFAs, or high hazardous fire areas, which will then drive other different mitigation tasks, so whether vegetation management, underlining, and so some of their operational protocols, increased investigation during certain red days. They're designating those areas in areas around Athena's mapping. We're able to describe, this is where you need to do extra careful to be not, make sure you don't create an ignition. So we're
Okay.
able to project out. Our model is basically a geospatially driven AI-enabled profiling engine. They're very something similar to what Google, Facebook, Apple does to us as people. Profiles us
Right.
and understands under these events, here's how this human will behave. We're doing something very similar to under these conditions and geospatial relationship between that location and land and its cohort around it. If an ignition were to happen, here's how it would perform.
Okay,
And we're able to
so
project that out a year in advance. And so now,
wow.
and do so consistently with back-tested and fully validated, modeling. You can now have confidence that when you see something as of a high level of risk with a certain combination of attributes in terms of our profile, fingerprint, that of all your areas that you manage in terms of your utility, you want to make sure you do this level of protocols in this area, this level of protocols in this area.
I
In
see.
very targeted areas to mitigate, to make sure that if an ignition happens, one, it's not from you, and two, everything's best prepared to create an interrupt so that perimeter doesn't actually occur.
Yeah.
If it happens uninterrupted, it goes.
So let's say we're a utility company and we own so many 100,000 acres of, we don't own, okay, we have a right of way over so many acres. We only have limited resources for fire suppression. So I'd say, David, like, where should I put my guys today? Where should I put my trucks today? Right?
That's right. So it's all about the optimization. So that conversation with the acre, like, where do I go to make the maximum impact up there? And
And what did it take, what did it take for you to get this project to where it is right now? Time, money, people, like what did you pour into this project to get there?
blood, sweat, tears. It was a this core idea again. It dates back 12 years. Was the original kind of genesis idea in agriculture, dealing primarily around like sustainability, and droughts. There are instances now of food companies beginning to wonder if they're going to be able to contract and get their supply of crop because of not only droughts but floods, and it's beginning to move, shifting harvest and planting patterns, et cetera. And with all of the data that's available out there through USDA research, all the science, I just found it almost impossible to just answer the basic question, where do I put the dollars? What's going to happen here? I didn't want to have
So it started in ag.
started in ag, and it began as a project with a major food brand that developed into almost an obsession. And so it's literally cost, fully funded by myself, and then through other bootstrapped projects and investment within agriculture, 20 when the pandemic happened. That's when food companies basically kind of shut down their. They just focused only on keeping COVID out of their plants, not necessarily
Right.
optimizing supply chain. So we were just about to launch a big investment, like big capital raise, right then, and that got pulled. So I had a decision to make. I kept funding the company, and was asked if our technology, our geospatial profiling, could get used for wildfires.
Okay.
And so it was in 2020 that we made the pivot. Kind of restructured the company, the team, and we have been now pulled aggressively into this arena. And so, yeah, it's taken really, I would say, the for IT, understanding the model itself, probably 7 or 8 years of real kind of continual development and tuning. But specifically around wildfires, the wildfire voice, let's just call it like the wildfire dialect of our acre, because we have a
Yep.
ag dialect, right? So if you don't understand that,
Right.
the wildfire dialect of our acre has really been in about 3 years of
Okay.
working with wildfire experts, people that have been, at Cal Fire, U.S. Fire Service, other catastrophic cat modeling, insurance side, et cetera. So it's been a long time. This isn't something that we decided to do a few weeks ago, being
Yeah,
in
right.
California.
No,
So,
you put a, how large a, an operation are you now? How many
yeah.
people are
So,
buried in keyboards?
keyboards. Yeah. So, the way that I have learned as an entrepreneur is you keep a tight ship for as long as possible, prove the model out, get tractions, and then begin to scale on that. I've been, this isn't my first rodeo in terms of entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
So we've got a very small team. We've got about four people on board, myself, a couple of developers, data scientists, a wonderful outreach business development, Elizabeth Pierce, who you reached out to.
She's terrific, boy.
Yeah, she's amazing. And a couple of wildfire
People.
experts, people. Yeah, I was about to say, very wise. That's what I'm trying to say. I don't want to say old. I'll say very wise, experienced in GIS modeling and wildfire research, et cetera. So, but the core, the real core of it is four of us that are building the products, understanding the marketplace, putting things in place, and we've got a pipeline of very impressive advisors and groups right now, and we're in the middle of that exciting time as a startup of getting the traction, beginning to get that pull, having to do 27 hours of work in 10 hours time,
Yep.
that kind of time, and now's the time for us to raise that capital again. So that's what we're doing right now. So
Okay.
anticipating that what we need, what we have is a team of four. What we need is a team of about eight or nine.
Okay. So we'll have to put a link to your pitch deck,
Yeah,
at the end of this, 'cause you never know who's listening, right?
well, we appreciate
So
that. Yeah. So Steve, yeah, so the answer is, it's a long-winded way of saying how big of a team are we? We're doing four, but we're really doing probably the work of like eight or nine, and that's what we need right
okay.
now. So
Yeah. Which is, the opposite. I remember somebody once asked David Letterman, like, how many people work on your staff? And he said about half of
yeah,
them. And
that's
he
right.
said, well,
Yeah.
right.
And typically when in these kinds of in startups, sometimes the entrepreneur is always trying to look for that growth, grow fast, grow fast, grow fast, or get capital, get investment. That's a dual-edged sword. The right
Yeah.
time to get is the need,
Yeah.
and that's where it makes
So we
sense.
should zoom out a little bit on that, because something you're highlighting here is really an important relationship between founding companies, CEOs, startups, new climate tech, and the government and our combined ability to manage fire, because clearly fire has grown beyond the ability of current technologies to manage it. And the new tech that's going to be required to, mitigate this, isn't going to come from inside the fire services, right? It's going to come from vendors to the fire service. So those vendors will not come to exist unless, the venture capital community says, hey, this is something we want to get behind, right? Because, right, if you're not successful in your raise and you go out of business, well, now thousands of fire departments cannot, will never have heard of you,
Yeah, the world
right?
in
So
general got lost. Yeah.
yeah, right. So that's an interesting relationship that we're seeing now increasingly, between the public-private partnership.
Yeah, it's really necessary, and it's. And I would even take one step further into that, Steve, in saying that I would almost say the technologies are out there. There needs to be a more efficient relationship between capital, technology, and policy. Because sometimes you can have the technology, but sometimes there's bureaucratic hangups in being able to get it. So one of the drag in the investment world, obviously investment needs is scaling growth, right? At the end of the day, it's about, sales cycle and how fast you get sales. So the bureaucracy is notoriously not fast. Utilities don't move on a dime. But I do believe, in my opinion, we're at an inflection point, which is a very specific, I mean, lots of people talk about inflection points, but this is literally the business school definition of an inflection point where everything that has worked up to now is. And, right now, in 5 years from now, you are not going to be doing or using the same kind of data. You're not going to be using the same kind of bureaucratic policies or organizations, et cetera. Otherwise, you'll get steamrolled by the reality of the fires, and it's not that that's what we're trying to avoid. We're trying to
Yeah,
avoid.
the fire gets the last word, right?
It
You
doesn't
can
care
think
if
your
you're not ready
policy
for
or your
it.
AI or whatever is as brilliant as you want to think it is. Ultimately, stuff burns down or it doesn't. So it's a real black and white, or black and green in
Yeah.
fire parlance, right?
It doesn't
Whether
matter. It doesn't
what you were doing
care.
worked.
It doesn't care that, here's the county line and they've got another set of policies. They don't care. Cars don't care.
Right.
It doesn't care.
But you care.
But we care. We should care. And
So
if
how
we
did you how so yeah, and we should all care, right? Because you get a fire burning a 2,000 miles away in Canada now, your kid's got asthma. Because we're all breathing the same, there's only one atmosphere in this planet.
Well, my
And it doesn't care either.
I'm in Northern California,
Oh, you're
so
breathing it.
I'm breathing it. I'm living it.
So you're not reliant on foreign smoke to get your minimum dosage.
No, I just could walk outside most summers and just take a good breath in of it myself. Yeah, no, I've got family friends, people I grew up with, my wife's childhood friends that live in, they're involved in, the Coffee Park fire. So, they're woke up and things is gone, just wiped off the face of the earth. This past summer, my wife and I took a vacation for the first time in like 8 years that we've taken a vacation. And it happened to be the day we landed in Maui that day,
Oh, my
the Lahaina
goodness.
fire. So, yeah,
It's
we
following
should
you.
care. Yeah, it
No, we
is.
should.
Yeah, so
Now, what are you?
it's you can't run from it.
No, many people didn't. Yeah, and it's hard to run with the smoke in your lungs. So, did you have kind of a first-hand experience of the Lahaina fire? Like,
I did.
you
We
saw
we
sparking and arcing and seeing it start and.
well, we, when we landed, it was mid-morning, 10:30 or so, 11, and driving from and it was my first time in Maui. I've never been to Maui. Beautiful island. Please go. They're wonderful. It's a wonderful island, wonderful people, wonderful culture and land. And as you're driving from the airport, we stayed in Kihei, which is 20, 30 minutes south of Lahaina. Driving in, I saw some of the smoke, obviously, and being in Northern California, I know what that is. And the plane, when it was landing, it could barely land because the wind gusts were so high that day. And I'm looking around the landscape and doing what I do, doing what is, see, if you're, it's hard not to see the things, right? Once you know the data and have the experience, like you look around, you're like, we better get the National Guard mobilized here, people. And then coming out of dinner, never looking towards Lahaina, and it looked just like a black ball. And it was just, I just, it was, it gets emotional thinking about it. And I mean, my wife, we're not going to unpack. Let's keep the bags back. Let's put them by the door because we're not out of this. And so, yeah, the next morning we woke up and you hear all the news and you're like, it just, yeah, it's heartbreaking. It's
It
heartbreaking.
really is. And I imagine experiences like that, are what helps you get 27 out of work, 27 hours of work out of every 10 hours, right? Because you know that if this work doesn't get done, like you're going to see more and more communities lost to fire.
Yeah, that's right. I mean,
And that's just, you know.
Steve, I mean, we're doing, right? It's like we have this knowledge and insight and skill set or just entrepreneurial weirdness. I just can't imagine going about my life knowing about something and just not saying, look, we need to address that. And so this is a particular set of skills, the geospatial data, understanding environmental interaction between, all of these different data sets and how to turn that data into operational decision making. That's just what I've been doing for better half, 12 years of my life now. I have something to offer. I just can't not
Yep.
do something about that. So.
Yeah, I get it. Tell me about the other land, being the landscape of people in your industry. So there's other players trying to bring AI to the decision making process, the data gathering process, and I should make more of a distinction between those, right? Because there's a camp of people who think like, oh, more data, that's all they need, which I people I know people can drown in data, so it has to be, there's a certain amount we can handle, and then beyond that we ignore it or we do nothing, right? And then there's a other camp of people that I'm also in that says, we should be using AI to make action decisions, not just to feed people more information, but actually say, okay, based on the information we're getting, here's what you should do. Of the 300 trucks and 200 guys and whatever you have, this is the best way to attack this at this moment. Right? And then as we get new data, so being that you're not alone in this landscape of using computers to help, inform decision making, how do you differentiate your approach to it from that of other organizations that are trying to accomplish the same thing but a different way?
That's a great question. And in rapidly thinking through what I how I want to organize it, I'll answer it this way. Let's first think about the life cycle of the data. So if you begin to
Yep.
segment those actions, if you begin to box those up, because essentially we're all kind of using the same data. I mean, there's only so much. It's land, it's topography, it's satellite, right? And so,
Right.
but and it's where are you targeting its use for? So the way that I've come to look at it is there is a kind of proactive, or in this case, in the world of fire, a maybe pre-fire, pre-event,
Okay.
pre-ignition, and then there's an ignition, and then there's post-ignition. Then there's then it kind of circles back, right? So if you kind of box those things up like that, Athena would be targeted in, we are targeting that pre-fire. We would call ourselves kind of proactive around it.
Okay. There's no money for proactive, is there?
Well,
It's all response, right?
it's all response. That's one of those inflection point things where
Yes.
response has been just fine. Response has been just fine. But now the world is realizing it is now cheaper to do something. The cost of not doing something is greater than the cost of doing something now. So that's that kind of inflection point that we see, that the proactive,
Yeah.
can we stage things? Can we begin to prepare for things? Can we mitigate or create interrupts strategically to where we could avoid these particular perimeters happening in the first place?
So tell me about what's pushed that point, though. Sorry, but in almost every circumstance, the proactive approach is the less expensive approach, right? It's cheaper for me to buy good groceries than it is for me to pay for my bypass, right? But insurance won't pay for good food, but they'll pay for the bypass, right? The funding for wildfire, is specifically says for suppression efforts, not for mitigation. Mitigate at your own risk, mitigate at your own expense. So What is it about Wildfire in particular that you feel is pushing the inflection point to the degree that we're now actually seeing more attention paid and money earmarked for prevention?
I think because the simply put, it is now there's been enough data in events over the past decade, specifically 7 or 8 years now, to where those checks being written are massively large, just from the insurance. There's now been studies of showing for it, the insurance checks, that's for every dollar spent on the sh on loss, there's between a $7 and $12 economic loss locally within that region of a wildfire over
I've
five.
seen up to 34x
Right.
on that.
That's right. And so now there's some real, I mean, these wildfires weren't happening like they are in the 80s and the 90s and the, maybe early 2000s. And so reactive's been fine, Steve. It's now the now the checks are big and they're consistent. It's not just a, oh, it happened in 2018. It's right, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. And eventually now all of a sudden on Hawaiian Islands and Colorado at just wham, fires wiping out stuff. And so yeah, that's why. That's that inflection point, because now you it's not something you can, it's in your face. The acre, we haven't listened to the acres, and now the acres are, they don't care if you can hear it or not, it's going to just happen and you got to pay for it. So can't get away,
It's
can't,
coming.
it's coming. Well, it's not coming, it's here, it's been knocking for a while.
It's here. That's right. When I look at my GIS information, which I don't even know what GIS stands for, although I know it has something to do with the world and looking at it from a computer point of view.
That's about it. There you
It's a sensory perception of the planet.
go.
But I divide the world basically into two places, right? Places that are on fire and places that are going to be on fire. You're either dealing with it right now or you're going to be dealing with it. And there's a lot of people that aren't on fire yet that don't know they're about to be on fire. Right? When I talked about suppression and mitigation strategies, in East Tennessee, like, oh, come on, it's look how green it is up here. We don't get fires. And then boy, a week later, like, what
Yeah, what
happened?
happened? Yeah,
We
no.
didn't see the how do, so how so how do people end up in this position of like, well, we didn't see this coming? When your whole function is to help people know what's coming.
Well,
I mean, and you're not the only one. There's people telling them like, hey, look, you haven't cut trees out here in since 1910. If you get a crown fire, you're going to lose 7 states worth of trees. And they're like, I don't want to hear it.
yeah, that's part of it. So that's part of it. Yeah, I mean, look, I after this phone call, I really should get on my bike and I should go to the gym. I know
Right.
it.
But will you?
I got to send a few more emails, Steve, and I got to do, look, it's just, that's just human nature. Okay.
Procrastinate.
Another thing, but look, it's also the economics. Not only is it costly, but we have put ourselves in this position. Look at housing growth, what's called the WUI, Wildland Urban Interface, right? So, a lot of these housing developments have gone up right in the line. It's like we're standing with our backs turned
In the
versus
railroad
in the
track, right?
railroad tracks,
The
or the
river,
surf is coming in and we get nailed because our backs to the surf, right? So we're standing, we've put ourselves in that position. And who wants to do proper wildfire management, prescribed burns, and get smoky air when you just bought a nice property and a housing development in the golf course in this area? So it's not just exclusively fires are coming. We've put ourselves in this area too.
Oh, for sure. So on the mitigation side, or you talk about developers going into areas that historically burn every 10 years, every 17, every whatever. Like that fire is going to come, and the developers like very short term, right? We bought the land, we built the houses, we sold them, we made a bunch of money, we're out. So my question is really like on a physical engineering standpoint. Is it possible, and I'm probably lean towards the side that it is it possible to go into a wooey area and build in such a way that when fire comes through, you have a smoke problem, but you don't have a fire problem. Like, can you clear the land around you sufficiently so that you have a fire break between the raging trees and your home so that you can choose your lot based on the view, not based on the risk, if you're willing to mitigate the property around you properly?
Yeah, I think, I mean, look, we could do this. And we put someone on the moon.
Exactly.
Like, see
Yep.
if we could do, and we should be, we're better than what we are right now. And so I,
We put a person on the moon in what, 6 years from
yes.
announcement to thing, and humans have been playing with fire for 200,000
Years.
years, and we still don't
I
know,
think we can do this.
XYZ
Yeah,
about it.
so I think,
Yeah. Yep.
when I, and I come back to that in my head, that's the whole point is as complex as the things we, I try to keep simple points and be like, we can figure this out. I can figure out how to tell you where a fire perimeter is going to be a year and a half from now. I do that. And we
Yeah.
can, in my opinion, of all the catastrophic risks, hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes,
So let
floods.
me ask you,
I was about to say wildfires, quite frankly, I think might be the only one that we really could navigate and drive through because, that
oh, you're right.
I think we can. And so that's one that shouldn't be the economic torpedo that it is.
Right, floods is going to be a lot harder, right?
Yeah, wind,
Like
weather. I
when
mean, if you,
38 billion gallons of water comes down on you, you
yeah,
know.
and there's not much you can do. I mean, if I could tell you where the wind is going to be gusting a year from now, we wouldn't be having this conversation, Steve. Right, but I could tell you where the conditions are ripe to be harvested under all of these different variables, et cetera. And here's the approximate area with a level of certainty that's consistency that here's where that perimeter will be, that this location will be inside or outside of the perimeter. We could do that.
That'd be huge, right? Then we could allocate resources, move them around as needed, based on your forecasts of, where the risks are going to be highest.
Yeah, and it's like any other profile. The profile changes. It's like any other. It's profile. You change. You change the fingerprint. You change the profile, and you change the economic. The
Right.
behavior.
I'm sure. Yeah, that's right. I'm sure downtown, the Boulder Police Department looks at a map of where all the robberies were, and they know where to put extra patrol cars that night.
That's right.
And they do that there for a while, and then now the hotspot moves somewhere else, and they follow it.
A simple way I've
It's
described the dynamic of our profile is when a wildfire does come, that changes the profiles within that local
Yep.
different area. And so that changes the probabilities, changes the geospatial relationship between all the other profiles about, that's why you don't necessarily see a wildfire burn exactly the same right on top of each other the next year. And so just the
Right.
probabilities are all different. So understanding how that inventorying and relationship within the profiles across a landscape can be modified, if you're able to do that, then you're able to modify how things behave and when it's traceable, when it's, and that's where the computers come in. It's when it's digital, when it's portable, sortable, you could measure it, then you could take actions on that pre-fire. When an event happens, you
Right.
can monitor that. And then you can begin to monitor the suppression, and then when things do happen, recompute, re your new pre-fire assessment. It's slightly different. It's
Yeah.
more accurate than what it is right now. And then you kind of retune your observations, detection, suppression.
It actually gets better,
And it,
right? When things get worse, they get better, right? Because once your town burns down, the likelihood that it's going to burn down next year drops to pretty
pretty
low.
low. And
Right,
that's
when
right.
the
And but it'll come
you're
back if you don't do them
right.
right.
Yep.
So make sure as you rebuild it in such a way and do these other management strategies around vegetation, maybe undergrounding, those kinds of things. that you could begin to do at a landscape scale, which begin to, as it comes back online, you're able to minimize that. It's not back to where it was before
Yes,
Parker.
that's right. So you said the language speaks, the land speaks a language that you interpret, you're running Google Translate from the earth to something that people could read. Then how do you make that second translation from what a, GIS data computer science guy like you knows how to interpret? How do you translate that into incident commander talk, boots on the ground talk, it's urban planner talk?
Yeah, so first of all, the trick, and what we've spent a lot of time thinking and testing out and just seeing the marketplace, is how do we make it as simple as possible without making it simpler than it needs to be?
The Einstein principle, right? Everything should be made as simple as possible, but not
But
simpler.
not simpler than it needs to be. And so yeah, we have a simple six class index, very low to very high. And we've got a couple
Okay.
of other different kind of grades. It's a very high with a targeted red and a couple of different attributes. So we try to make these flags. We try to make something as simple as possible to without overgeneralizing. It's a high risk. Well, not all high risks are, very high risk at this particular context. And so we have strive to make that just a simple kind of red, yellow, green kind of idea,
Yep.
provided in simple dashboards, simple maps, give the ability to, for example, one of the new deliverables, and we're beginning to organize a new product around, is simply saying, here's your landscape, and you could select on, I just want to see the highest risk areas, and here they are, and then you could go backwards in time and saying, here's how those profiles have performed within this particular general
Okay.
area of the state. So, for example, Texas, here's the profiles that make up 50% of the profiles that burn. Like, I mean, every year, these specific profiles make up 50% of the area that have always burned. And they have these specific
Okay.
characteristics with them. Here's where those are across your entire landscape. Here's where all the other supporting areas, whenever this one burns, here are these burns that burn with it 95% of the time. Here's where they are. So that we're trying to make it as easy as, well, where's the highest risk? Where's the highest economic risk? Where's the highest potential for the highest impactful ignition? So we've tried to
Right.
give this simple indexing, this profiling concept, and then answer specific questions with the data. And give historical context from a data, not and it's not that the computers can tell you everything, Steve, that a fire marshal knows. The way that we have an approach on AI is that it's not the computer taking your job or doing your job. The computer is doing its job,
No.
vetting the data and telling you everything that the data happens. And that's just that. It's not an opinion. That's just the voice of the aether saying, every time I have these conditions, I burn 50% of the time. That's
Yeah,
just
right.
that. And the
How
intelligence
granular physically are you?
at 30 meter pixels. So,
Okay.
currently we've got 9 states fully fingerprinted. It takes us 24 hours to fingerprint another state. The fingerprints go back 8 years.
That's
Yeah.
amazing.
So
Wow.
in essence,
And so how do you unsilo all the data that you need to pull to make your fingerprint of the state?
that's where the blood, sweat, and tears in 8 years of my life has spent on. When
Because
I thought this, Steve, would be a 6 month project 8 years ago when I first did this.
so,
I
wow.
thought it would take me out.
Well, it is a half a year project, just not half of an Earth year.
Yeah, and so I thought
It's half of a Martian
when
year.
I did this originally, I said, well, I know where all the I know the government data, I know the water data, satellite data. It took me 6 months to put this
Right.
together. 3 years later, I came to the conclusion that the problem isn't that we need to build an AI to make decision-making tools around this. The problem is that we need the data to be accessible, full stop.
And right
That's it.
now, there's tons and tons of data all around the world. And actually, David, that's the reason I started this podcast, was based on the idea that, I have faith in mankind's ingenuity. And I know that if enough bright minds come together on a project, you know, they stand a pretty good likelihood of success. Right. That everyone's working on their little piece of the puzzle, but you can't solve the puzzle unless you can see what the other pieces look like. And so, you know, this university's got this algorithm and, you know, and the Falkland Islands, this, the other one, and USC, they got the other one, and this supercomputer does it this way, you know, and so lots and lots of, probably lots of redundancy of everyone trying to solve the same part of the problem. And then how do we know which parts of the problem aren't being addressed if we can't see what everyone's doing? So we need to have, and I'm not saying a podcast is the way to bring the great minds together, but just to start a dialogue internationally so that we can learn about, you know, what are they doing at CERN? Right. What are they doing in Portugal? Who's working on what? And to really create this, you know, international brain trust or at least meet and greet that would lead to more relationships that would lead to solving bigger pieces.
Yeah, I would say, you know, Athena, how do we stitch that together? That is our, that's where our IP lies. You know, there is IP to the Voice of the Acre. It is in that geospatial and temporal over space and time, triangulation and creation of new data, which is then traceable, computable, etc. And so it's dimensionally scalable. I had to build it to where it's dimensionally scalable, meaning I could onboard new data and not have to rebuild the model. So we can add more data to it, and it begins to scale up in its, you know, ability to be more granular at a particular area. There's, for example, there are some profiles and locations to where no matter how much more data you add to it, it's not going to really improve the consistency in its projections, right? But there are other areas to where, okay, this kind of data would help the model in that particular area. We know the difference in what kind of additional data which can inform across the model. We could do that at the snap of a finger across all of these different profiles. And so our model, you know, the data, because a wildfire in Texas is different than in Arizona, than New Mexico, they all have their own different kind of fingerprints. If I were to go through the data, I could show you. Sure. And when we show people, it makes sense to them. They're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Because, and then they'll go, all the fire experts, the wisdom of the fire chiefs, et cetera. They're like, well, yeah, that's why, because, and they'll begin to just unload like Stephen Hawking's about like their brilliance about all the stuff, because the data now is there in front of them. And
I see. It's not a hunch anymore.
Their gut feeling has data behind it. And so the way I look at AI is that if we all just stay in our lane, the computers do the computing, all the hard stuff that we can't do. We are able to be open-minded and say, okay, my hunch, and then look at it and match it all up together. Then you have an incredibly powerful thing of wisdom and hunches with data-driven insights, and the computer's not going to know what to do. That user will, if he has the right data.
Right. Fascinating. David, for folks who want to get in touch with you, learn more about your program, or write a big check to help you get to that next raise, or, you know, sign in as a client, you know, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
They can email us, a simple email at info@project-athena.com, or they can go to Athena Intel. That's Athena, I-N-T-I-E-L. IO, Athena Intel, and there you could send us a contact. There's an email or a form in there where you could send us a hello email, and we'll get back to you. So info@project-athena.com or athenaintel.io on the website.
Wonderful. We'll put that in the click here thing. All right. David Sibnesky from the Athena Project. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Fire Break. Wishing you tons of luck with this, and I hope that the next snap of the finger idea doesn't take another 8 years. But I bet if it does, you'll put in the time, because, you know, because you're doing the right work.
I did spend 8 years. I wouldn't be here without those 8 years.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you did it, and it's a You're filling up a big
All
piece
right,
of the
thank you,
puzzle
Steve.
there. Listen to the planet. Great. David, thanks so much. All right, folks, you've been listening to The Fire Break. I'm Steve Wolf. The Fire Break is sponsored by Team Wildfire, developing new technology and tactics to deal with the most destructive fires of our future, which hopefully we'll be able to avoid thanks to people like David. Thanks for joining me on The Fire Break.